I'm speaking with Tom Bias, CEO of Growth Energy, and coming up this weekend, we have an exciting race for NASCAR in which American ethanol will be prominently displayed, right, Tom?
Absolutely. Clint Bowyer is going to drive the number 33 American ethanol car down at Martinsville Speedway, and of course, Clint Bowyer won the race last weekend, so we're real excited. He runs well at Martinsville, and glad to see him in the American ethanol paint out again for the second time this year.
American ethanol is a partnership between Growth Energy and the National Corn Growers and NASCAR, and it was really started this year with 15% ethanol in all the NASCAR races. How is this promotion working out for all of you?
I think it's working great. You know, this is our first year in a multi-year effort as we go forward, and one of the main objectives was to show to the American consumer and the American motorist what a great fuel ethanol is. And, you know, the transition for the NASCAR teams has been seamless. We knew it was a good fuel. All their testing showed it was a good fuel, but when you get it out on the track, that really has demonstrated to the American public that these cars can go around for several hours at speeds around 200 miles per hour, and they haven't had any problems with the fuel, no hiccups, none whatsoever. They've got increased horsepower. They've got increased mileage in some cases, and the status quo in others.
And now, of course, the NASCAR partnership coincides with the fact that EPA approved at the beginning of this year the use of 15% ethanol, the waiver that Growth Energy had requested, yet that has yet to be implemented and continues to face challenges from people who are saying that we shouldn't have 15% ethanol in our gasoline blend. What do you say about that?
I say that ultimately we're going to get it into the marketplace. We've got some hurdles to overcome, regulatory hurdles primarily, that we're confident that we'll get them worked out and get it out there into the marketplace. We should be getting it out there in the marketplace because, you know, going from a 10% blend to a 15% blend can create jobs right here in America that can't be outsourced. It certainly is keeping those valuable resources that our nation spends and sends overseas for addiction to foreign oil right here at home where we need it. We need to be thinking about the American economy and not benefiting these other nations, many of which who don't like us. We've been addicted for far too long to foreign oil, and this is a great next step. We proved over the last several years that we can produce 10% fuel. It's cheaper for consumers. It's better for the environment. It creates jobs here in America. And moving to 15% will ultimately happen.
Well, what's happening right now in Washington, D.C.? We're looking at the volumetric ethanol excise tax credit expiring at the end of this year. We've had a tax on the RFS2. What do you see happening in Congress right now that might affect ethanol?
Well, it's kind of like the weather. You know, if you predicted tomorrow's weather would be like today, you probably predict tomorrow's political climate in Washington is going to be just like today's as well. And right now it's stalemate, Cindy. They're not really moving forward. Everybody's waiting on this 12-member super committee to see how they move forward on deficit reduction. The tax programs that affect our industry are set to expire at the end of the year, but we're not alone. There's several other tax credits that also are up for renewal. We think that, I'm pretty sure that the VTEC is going to go away, but we're not sure about any of the other tax credits, like the infrastructure fueling tax credit for flex pumps and E85 pumps, small producer tax credit, what happens or doesn't happen with the tariff, and others. But everybody's playing the waiting game right now.
And I know you were involved with the National Farmers Union for many years, and we're looking at supposedly a 2012 farm bill. Secretary Vilsack came out this week saying that he would like to see some of the there basically be an energy title in the farm bill. What do you think about the climate for a farm bill coming up in a presidential election?
It's kind of like the other climate out here. I think the agriculture committees right now are scrambling to see what they can or, and cannot do in this overall super committee deficit reduction program. And they, you know, if the super committee succeeds in moving down the road, there's very strong likelihood that the Farm Bill could be, or the main items in the Farm Bill, certainly the spending aspect of it, could be decided here by the end of the year. And where's that place agriculture as they go forward with having to write a Farm Bill before the end of next year remains to be seen. But I think, Cindy, I think the key word to describe Washington is uncertainty. And so everyone's scrambling around, kind of looking under every shadow to see what can or can't be done, or which direction or what that they will or won't go. And until that becomes a little clearer, who knows? I commend the Secretary for encouraging them to keep an energy title. It's a valuable program. It was the first energy title ever in a Farm Bill, and it should be extended. Having said that, who knows how, when, or what is going to go forward. We continue to advocate the continuation of an energy title. There's valuable programs, the BCAP, the REAP program, biorefinery assistance, and bio-based products, provisions in there that are important to our industry, and we'll just have to see how it goes.
What do you think about progress that's being made in terms of getting especially flex fuel vehicles on the road and getting some kind of, you know, a higher percentage of them on the road than we are now, the progress being made by car makers and potential for
noble fuel standard? Yeah, it increases every year, Cindy. You know, the U.S. Automakers have pledged to produce half of their vehicle fleet as flex fuel vehicles in 2012, and that hasn't changed. We still see those numbers grow. We still have sort of a chicken or egg process here about, if you have the cars, you have to have the distribution and be able to provide higher blends for those cars. And as you know, this has been something that we've been very adamant about, is getting that fueling infrastructure out there with the flex pumps, so that the choice becomes that from the consumer angle, not from the oil companies that control the distribution. And that way a consumer can choose whatever blend they want based on their type of car, their price, and performance. And we're confident they'll choose higher blends if given the choice because of the economics and the performance aspect.
Getting back to the RFS, one of the big parts of that is actually having cellulosic ethanol or some kinds of advanced biofuels, and so far we're not meeting those targets. What do you think about the future for that and how investment in that might continue to be helped by the government?
Well, I think the future is really bright. You know, the cellulosic industry and those that had plans to build cellulosic plants got put on hold after the economic recession of 2008, when credit and investment dried up, and you're starting to see a thaw now as more people are announcing plans to build and start construction for cellulosic. All the critics of the RFS, what they don't realize is that sends a message to the investment community and those who are interested in building advanced technology processes, we can't count on government certainty being there. The RFS or the RFS2 was just passed in 2007. It's supposed to last till 2022. And if people see them start tinkering with it and rolling back this or modifying this, that sends a signal that there's no certainty. And for those who want to see the next generation of biofuels, our message to them is, don't mess around with the RFS, because that would be the wrong move to help us achieve our goals.
Well, getting all the way back to the NASCAR race this weekend, it's helping this visibility of ethanol should help in terms of the way people look at ethanol. We're facing a constant battle of the criticism of ethanol and people's perceptions of it, and I'm hoping that this, you know, visibility should make be making a difference.
Well, NASCAR, and as Brian Francis said, they're a third-party validator. To that consumer and that motorist and those NASCAR fans, those legions of NASCAR fans, who've heard all the myths or all the misinformation about ethanol, that, oh, your car's not going to run on it, or your mileage is going to be significantly reduced, or your engine's going to break down. They validated that that's not the case. This is a great fuel. They get great performance. They get increased horsepower, no mileage loss. And that's not us saying it. That's someone who actually has a sport that's dependent on those cars being going around there for several hours very fast in very strong competition. So, I think that point has been proven, and that will only grow as we move forward. And every week in all three NASCAR series, the winning car in Victory Lane got there successfully with E15 in their tank.
And the race is this Sunday at 1?
Martinsville, Virginia.
1 o'clock Eastern.
Eastern.
And you'll be there, right?
Yeah, well, unless Congress is in session.
All right, well, thank you very much.
Thanks,
Tom Bias with Growth Energy.